WOR, now an integral part of the nationwide network of mutual stations, has consistently maintained the reputation of keeping abreast and ahead of the latest in program and technical developments. In an endeavor to continue this standard of broadcasting perfection, 8 weeks ago, WOR sent its chief engineer, J.R. Popoli, abroad to study the progress of European radio. Mr. Popoli returned 2 days ago after conducting an exhaustive survey, and tonight, the Special Features Division brings you an informal discussion of the results and conclusions of his observations. How many countries did you visit, Mr. Popoli?
In the 2 months I was away, Mrs. Popoli and I toured England and 7 countries on the continent. And even from the time we sailed from New York on the SS Washington of the United States lines, we were in close touch with the latest developments in radio broadcasting. On the way over, the new radio phone equipment of the SS Washington was put in service, and I was able to keep in daily telephone contact with my office. From the mid-Atlantic Ocean during the voyage, a nationwide broadcast was conducted with as great ease as from a modernly equipped studio.
Well, although I realize, sir, that you haven't been home long enough to compile all of the pertinent data that you gathered, what are the outstanding conclusions that you've been able to arrive at?
I found a medium of transmission that is identical to that which we have here in the States, but the content of the program material as an entertainment feature is vastly different than that which the American public receives. Luxembourg in Europe and one or two of the French stations are the only ones which operate on a commercial basis. All of the others are operated under government supervision under the direction of the post, telegraph, and telephone.
Well, do you feel, Mr. Popoli, the commercial system of broadcasting as practiced in the United States is superior to the government control plan now in vogue throughout Europe?
In my opinion, the American system has many more advantages, although there is something to say for the government plan. For example, the British Broadcasting Corporation is not in a position to spend huge sums for the development of outstanding personalities and program material. In England, each listener pays a receiver tax of $2.50 per year. This amounts to a total income of $20 million per year from 8 million listeners. This sum is used for programs, salaries, operation, maintenance, and technical development. In addition, a portion of this money is made available by the BBC for its television production and operation.
Well, this system of taxation prevails throughout Europe, does it not, Mr. Popoli?
That's quite true, Tom, and therefore everywhere you find governmental policies injected into broadcast material. The people have little choice and must listen to broadcasts from official stations. However, the use of wired radio, a novelty in American homes and which has not been exploited as yet, is very widely used throughout Europe, particularly in areas where reception of regular stations is not up to par. Wired radio, in case this term is unfamiliar to you, means the transmission of programs over direct wires into homes without the use of radio receiving sets. There have been a few experiments along this line in the States, but on the whole, it has not met with as great success as in Europe. There, people pay a regular monthly rental for the reception of 1 or 2 programs from which they may choose, in addition to the regular governmental tax.
Well, what kind of entertainment do listeners receive on this service?
They are given a choice of 2 stations, the regular national broadcast or that of the commercial stations in France and the continent, and of course, depending upon the value of the program. The listener, who is equipped with the wired radio system, simply turns a switch to receive one program or the other, and he must pay for this service. It is believed, however, that some of the European nations may take advantage of using the government stations for the sale of commercial programs, since surveys indicate that commercial programs usually attract the larger audience through their presentation of a greater variety of shows.
Well, speaking of programs, Mr. Popoli, what type of entertainment, in your estimation, do Europeans seem to enjoy the most?
Well, they seem to enjoy the same sort of thing we like over here in America. Variety shows with gags and good old American swing. As a matter of fact, the Palace of Varieties, that is featured over the Mutual Network, broadcast from London every Saturday evening and received here in America by shortwave on Saturday afternoon because of the time difference, not only draws a great visible audience, but also is a highlight of the British evening program schedule. I noticed in Germany and France that American dance recordings were very much in favor, Nazi listeners appreciating a relief from a heavy schedule of educational and propaganda programs. However, it should be emphasized that it is very seldom that European listeners are able to find such programs on their dials. And speaking of recordings, Tom, about 60% of the broadcasts heard are transcribed.
Well, how about special features broadcasts? Do they follow the American standard of elaborate news coverage?
That's a good point, Tom. As I found that except in cases of great importance, politically speaking, there is little emphasis placed on remote broadcasts. Whenever it is necessary to cover a special feature event, and that almost always is related to the public appearance of some great political figure, most European stations make a recording of the event and place it on the air during the evening hours when the greatest audience is available.
Well, from that it would seem evident that little importance is placed on bringing news to the listener as soon as possible.
Yes, as a matter of fact, there is little conflict between European newspapers and radio. The news broadcasts are carefully prepared and presented with political significance in mind. News about the particular country's governmental policies is amplified or reduced according to the situation and opinion of the officials. As a matter of fact, it is difficult to purchase foreign newspapers in certain European countries, and furthermore, I had the very unique experience of spending 70 cents for the Saturday Evening Post in Germany. The public must take as the gospel truth the news which they hear from the government stations or read in the censored press.
Now, if you don't mind, let's return to program technique for just a moment. Do European broadcasts have the smoothness of our American productions?
Definitely no. They still fail to start programs on the hour, quarter hour, half hour, or three-quarter hours, as we do here. Because there is no reason for starting and stopping a program at certain times, there being no commercial commitments, the result is a lack of exact tempo. Here in this country, it is important that we allot our time on the air in equal periods, which must start at the scheduled time. Over there, if a schedule is once lost, there is no effort made to make it up, and a loose couple effect and many awkward pauses follow. In general, they haven't the precision of operation which we enjoy here.
Well, how about the advancement in other fields of radio, such as television?
I was very much impressed while in England with the advancement made by the British Broadcasting Corporation, which now has 3,000 television subscribers in the greater London area. Television broadcasts are transmitted for 2 hours in the afternoon and for an hour and a half, and generally 2 hours in the evening. They are pretty well received all over London, but they do not have the one major problem which affects us here, mostly in New York, Chicago, and Philadelphia, and other large cities. That is, numerous high steel buildings which tend to absorb and blanket the signal. But neither do they have the advantage of tall buildings from which to transmit. The BBC television station is located in Alexandra Palace, approximately 5 miles from the center of London, which is not more than 300 feet high, overlooking Greater London, but puts a very credible image into the television receivers throughout London.
Well, in London television, is it really easy to distinguish the pictures?
Yes, they are projected on a screen of about 8 by 10 inches, which may be viewed in a semi-darkened room. The type of program material transmitted is of considerable interest, although it places more of a strain on the audience than does a usual sound broadcast which comes to the listeners over the Mutual Broadcasting System. It required all of our attention, the same as a motion picture. By the way, the voice and pictures are broadcast on separate frequencies and synchronized, the same as our American movies.
Then I suppose this produces different problems than those of our usual broadcasts.
Well, of course, it is necessary for the actors to memorize all of their lines for each program, just as actors on the stage do. This feature applies to the sound effects men also. Because if a door is to close, it must close at the right moment and it must close with the proper effect. It's doubtful if the British or those on the continent have progressed any further technically than we have, but they have advanced a long way in production of programs and the exploitation of television. For example, I saw at Alexandra Palace two television cameras in use which enabled the BBC program men to create elaborate effects on the television screen, such as fade-ins, dissolves, and other tricks similar to those employed by motion picture cameramen here.
Well, but what about the advancement of television over on the continent?
I found that in France, especially Paris, great strides had also been made. But on the whole, the results have not been taken far beyond the laboratory walls. Germany, contrary to popular belief over here, is third in the European development of the art. However, the Germans have gone a long way in the perfection of the television telephone, and I had the pleasure of seeing this in use over short distances while in Berlin. For example, I talked with Mrs. Popley, who was 5 miles away, and saw her facial expressions plainly upon the screen before me.
Well, I can imagine that this little development you described will cause trouble for businessmen who call home to say they've been delayed at the office.
I thought of that too, Tom. In fact, my wife even commented upon the fact that I needed a shave while I was talking to her. You see, the television telephone in Berlin operates both ways. In other words, it is not only possible to see and hear, but it works in such a way that you can also see and hear the person while that person can see and hear you. I think that this utilization of television has a great future ahead of it, and it is also reported that Germany is planning to extend this service into 12 other cities throughout its own territory, and it is planned to have that in operation before the end of the summer. The United States, however, still has a sizable lead over its European competitors in the technical development of this television field.
Well, it's good to hear you say that, Mr. Popley, but now, about facsimile with which WOR and other stations of the Mutual Network have been conducting experiments. How about that?
I went over to Europe, Tom, with the idea of asking questions, but when it came to facsimile, I found the foreign engineers asking me more questions than I could ask them concerning facsimile. Development in facsimile, except in Germany, has not kept pace with the advancement in this country. However, the perfection of both television and facsimile is being closely watched by the military in all European countries. I discovered their engineers, without exception, eager to learn of the progress which we here in America have been making in these fields. There are no regularly scheduled facsimile transmissions in Europe, such as those of WOR and other stations who have been on the air since early this year.
Are wire facilities as easily obtainable in Europe as they are here in the United States?
Not in the remote districts. Here in the United States, we can get a telephone circuit to almost any point where telephones are in use, but not so in Europe. Although conditions are rapidly improving, the same equipment is used in most countries, and all technicians are generally familiar with its general technique and operation.
Well, Mr. Popley, with all of that work and all the traveling you did over there, you must have gathered considerable data on this trip.
Tom, I made very elaborate notes. I had, in fact, a book full of them, and it's going to be a big job analyzing and compiling all of the material I have been able to secure. But all of it will be used, we hope, in the further development of WOR and the Mutual Network.
Yes, I'm sure it will. And we've been very glad to hear you speak so highly of our own American broadcasting industry. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to J.R. Popley, chief engineer of station WOR, who returned from Europe 2 days ago aboard the SS Washington after an extensive tour of Europe, during which he analyzed and studied the progress of radio among our neighbors across the sea. The program has come to you as a presentation of the Special Features Division.